This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at LinkedIn.com/decide. That's LinkedIn.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
It's time for a noon kick.
And as they say in Tinseltown, roll up.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
They had pride. They had talent. They had hats and T-shirts.
Dirt and Sprague on Football Friday.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app. Download the app, make the fan your favorite station, and enable push notifications for the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and your favorite shows.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, 12:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson in with you on this beautiful Football Friday.
What is happening? God, it is gorgeous today.
It is a beautiful fall day.
Doesn't that just put you in a good mood when you wake up, the sun's peering through the curtains, you look outside? God, it's going to be a good day.
I had one of the best nights viewership-wise in some time last night.
Do tell on Thursday Night Football?
Well, yes. Thursday Night Football.
Yeah.
I also watched something else while I was watching Thursday Night Football.
What the hell else was going on last night? What did I miss?
Boy, you're not up with the culture, are you?
No, I'm not with the culture.
So you didn't watch the verses between Jeezy and Gucci Mane?
Can you speak English, please? You mean Gucci Mane like John Buchagross? Is that the most white thing I've ever said on this show?
That's probably, yeah. White things we say, and we'll just use them as drops as we go along.
Look, I saw there were tweets on the timeline about with hashtags that I didn't quite understand or comprehend what was going on. And
have you been following the verses?
No, I have no clue what this is. No.
Okay. Well, first of all, it's a brilliant idea.
Okay.
It's basically a stream, and you can watch it on Apple. You can watch it on Instagram. They take all of these musical artists, mm-hmm. and they just put their catalog versus another artist's catalog. And it's not a battle in the sense of like a traditional battle. Like you're not name calling.
Sure.
You're just playing your hits.
And the artists perform them themselves?
They perform them themselves. Like one guy will do a song and then that will transition. The other guy will then go after that song. And they just go back and forth, back and forth.
Well, that's kind of a cool idea.
I like it. They've done it for R&B. They've done it for rap. And last night was a pretty big one for the rap fans.
Are they like beefing? Was it like a feud or?
It's a 15-year rap beef.
15-year beef? That's a long-term beef,
that's
man.
Longer than Biggie and Pac. I just want to throw that out there.
That beef has a learner's permit, man.
I felt like Napoleon Dynamite's brother once he starts dating the black chick from Detroit.
Yeah.
You remember he ends up wearing the do-rag? That's kind of how I felt in my kitchen yesterday. I'm a 33-year-old white guy living in Oregon City, and I'm sitting here watching Seahawks Cardinals.
Making something really healthy for dinner, probably.
I did. And then
some organic fruits.
Only water.
Okay.
And on my phone, I'm watching Jeezy versus Gucci Mane.
Yeah, that's right. I love some of those tweets go viral occasionally, and it'll be like a white lady or a goofy looking white dude, like, yeah, I'm pulling up to drop my kids off at elementary school, blaring some gangster rap.
That's kind of who I am.
You know, hey, you got to get on however you got to get on, man.
I am who I am. I'm not going to be able to change. And I'm a big fan of Jeezy. I've also liked Gucci Mane. So it was that was a big night in the Sprague household last night of watching a chaotic, insane football game. That made no sense how the Seahawks got to 28 points.
If you
didn't watch that game, wouldn't you have just thought, oh, it's a normal 4-touchdown game? 28 points?
You'd think.
But it came with a missed extra point, a safety, and two field goals.
Right. It's a weird route to get to 28.
Kevin Clark said this about a month ago, and he wasn't wrong. The Seahawks have never in their lives had a normal football game.
No. Especially in primetime. Maybe like Sundays, but especially in primetime, nothing normal ever happens.
Well, I should largely say the Russell Wilson era.
Yes.
They've never had, even the non-primetime, people don't forget the Atlanta game. They start their season. They ended up winning that game by double digits. So we didn't really dive into it. That game was 14-12 in the third quarter.
There's a Twitter account called Scoregami, and it tracks all the different outcomes of NFL games over the years. And you'll get like a new one every single week. There'll be a random game that ends, you know, 25-22. And it's like, hey, Scoregami, that's the first 25-22 game in NFL history. I feel like Seattle has about half of those.
Yeah, they probably do.
And last night was another example of randomly getting to 28 points.
Well, and you had a team like Seattle, and then you put it on Thursday, where Thursdays are kind of always weird. It's you're going to set up and get a game like you got last night.
Well, you're burying the lead here. Who won the rap battle?
Well, this is my thought. I've watched a lot of these verses. I think these are great content things for people who love music.
Uh-huh.
I think you don't really conclude who wins these because I think it largely just boils out to who are you a bigger fan of?
And you just kind of lean into your fandom. So if you like somebody going in, you're going to think that they perform better.
Yeah,
to a certain extent.
Well, I think you're going into a little bias, right? I went into a little bias. I like both artists, but by the time they ended it, which, by the way, they squashed the beef.
Oh, good.
That's big breaking news.
Look at that. That's big news in the rap game, man.
But I think you don't really have a winner per se. You more just walk away saying,
sure,
my guy won.
It's Young Jeezy, right?
Well, he's called Jeezy now. He's not young anymore.
He dropped the young from his name.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He's like Papa Diddy Pop. He's just changing his name as he goes on.
It's like P. Diddy, who's now Diddy.
Okay.
He dropped the P.
By the way, we never talked about it. Did you see the video of him diving into a swimming pool?
You mean trying to dive into a swimming pool?
How do you not know how to dive into a pool?
Well, a lot of people don't.
I mean, that's like pretty...
I bet you I don't dive very well.
I mean, but yeah.
I don't like to dive. It scares me going head in.
Really?
Yeah.
Even if it's a deep enough pool?
No, I always... Because I know two people that have gotten paralyzed.
Well, that's a little scary.
Right.
In deep pools?
Well... Not in the shallow end, I'll tell you that much.
Okay, well, that's a little terrifying.
I always pencil dive.
Yeah.
Feet first. Or a little mini cannonball. That's kind of how
I hold your arms in on your side. Yeah, the only thing I know about Jeezy, I have not listened to Jeezy in a very long time, but I do know that Jay Billis, who I follow on Twitter, will tweet out his rap lyrics.
Yeah, Jay Billis.
That's the connection there.
So it was a big night in my house last night. Okay. I got to watch Russell Wilson and Kyler Murray. I saw a safety at the end of a game, a pivotal moment. And then I watched two rappers I like.
Well, it was, I'm happy for the rap game. Happy they squashed the beef. I'm sure Swigard was all over it watching Jeezy and Gucci. He was all over that last night. Totally.
Dude,
was.
Swag was texting me.
Hey. Nice shirt. The shirt came in, man. That looks good.
It does look nice,
that
doesn't it?
That is such a cool design.
Yeah. Well done, baseballism.
That's a good look.
The Dodger championship t-shirt. So
I told him it looks better in person than it did online. And I like the way it looked online.
It does. Yeah. It looks
The thing is, it's only a large. The extra larges are no longer.
That's a large?
Oh. This is just large.
Really?
That's kind of a small large on you.
Well, that's good.
Is that a compliment or a diss?
That's what happens when you lose 40 pounds.
Yeah. No, I meant like, it just when I wear larges now, because we're about the same size now.
More or less.
You've lost an entire human being. The larges kind of run a little big on me.
Okay, yeah.
So
yeah, me too. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Absolutely.
Like swimming in that thing.
Duh.
God. It's like a nightshirt goes down to my knees.
Well, it's always a wild card with larges. Sometimes they're perfect and sometimes they are a little too large.
I mean, it breaks the guy who wears a t-shirt in the pool, probably a nose plug too. Are you that guy?
No.
T-shirt pool guy?
Wait, I'm the guy who will be shirtless in all the photos? You think I'm wearing a t-shirt in the pool?
No, that's not true. Not you. Not you.
I might as well be Speedo,
finally too cold though for shirtless runs. We can't be doing that anymore.
I think today would be a good shirtless run day.
Not by the time you get home. I mean,
nobody needs that.
It's almost sunset. Like, it's dusk.
Dude, it's bad enough when you do it in the summer and you're still pale. Imagine how pale you're going to be now because the sun hasn't existed in like 2 months. So that's not good. You're going to be blinding people. If you run into glass, you're going to break it. It's not good.
Can I tell you something that might surprise you a little bit?
Sure.
I haven't been on a run. Like a legit run, like I used to. I haven't been on a run in 2 months.
Look at you. It's bulk season, baby.
It is bulk season. All I do is lift now.
You gotta get
well,
big.
I can't lift anymore.
Oh, no, they close the gyms. Yeah.
Maybe after 2 weeks.
Yeah, sure.
See how that goes.
And knock on wood. Oh, yeah, because sure, cases are going down.
So,
know?
Yeah, I might have to start running again, which is great. But
I gotta keep burning those calories, so.
That's the only exercise you do, right? Largely?
No, I have every other day, I've got some dumbbells and some planking that I do at home.
You plank?
You're a plank guy, huh?
Yeah.
Hmm. How long do you plank for?
So I do it in between sets. So I'll do 3 60-second planks with 60 seconds in between after a set of the dumbbell workouts.
Oh,
and
okay.
Then I cycle through that twice.
Yeah.
You know something insane on planking?
Yeah.
My 8-year-old planked the first time ever. I was doing it one day and she's, what are you doing? And I'm like, it's called a plank. And
work on your core.
Works on your core.
Yeah.
So she tried it. She did 8.5 minutes.
Just hanging out.
Well, what does she weigh, like 12 pounds or something?
Well, I mean, how close to 8 minutes can you do?
Oh, I could, for the length of time, no.
Right. That's insane.
Yeah. That's insane.
Even though your body weight might not be
if you're doing it right. Like if you're not she lifting your butt, it. Lowering your
right.
butt.
Trying
if,
to get yeah. that. And I do the bent on my elbows yeah, as yeah, opposed, because yeah. that, you feel it everywhere.
I think
after
if you put your forearms
seconds.
On the yeah. ground with the elbow, I yeah. think you feel it really, really
oh,
well
yeah.
there.
Yeah. That's a long time to do it.
8 minutes is, yeah, it's crazy.
That's impressive. I've never lasted 8 minutes.
But yeah, the Seahawks game yesterday, man.
I'll pull that.
Good for them.
That was their most complete win of the season. And it was, I think, a refresher of how we kind of overreact each way. When teams aren't playing well, we think, oh, God, what's wrong with them? Now they get this win and they're back in the driver's seat in the NFC West. And have you looked at their upcoming schedule?
It's pretty favorable.
They have the easiest schedule left in the NBA
Jets,
or the
Eagles,
NFL, dude.
And Giants.
So they could easily rattle off 3 or 4 wins in a row now. It was nice to see them get the run game going if you're a Seahawks fan, because they need that to help out Russell Wilson. The defense now back-to-back weeks has played good football. Like,
how about Carlos Dunlap getting
Carlos
the game-winning sack?
A ceiling sack. They had pressure throughout the night on Kyler Murray. They didn't let him run around, and they got the run game going. So it was a good complete win for them, and now they got a chance to rack a few up as they continue to get healthy against bad teams.
You're right. The narrative, by the way, has already flipped. Now it's like, can Green Bay keep up with Seattle?
Yeah. What's wrong with Arizona? It is funny you think about Arizona. We didn't talk about this much, but they're a Hail Mary away from losing 3 straight games.
Yes, they are.
So I think Kyler Murray is a lot of fun to watch, and they're an up-and-coming team in this league, and they're going to be around for a while. But I still have big issues with Cliff Kingsbury and game decisions that he's making. He had some...
What did he do yesterday you didn't like?
He had a few, like the timeout to save the delay of game penalty when they got the ball off. They hiked it, and he wasted one of his last timeouts. It didn't end up impacting him because they didn't get the first down anyways.
Aren't those tough, though? If you see 1 second as a coach, is it your mind saying, I don't want to lose 5 yards?
Yeah, I mean, I get it, but also I would rather have 2 timeouts left and trust Kyler Murray to pick up those 5 yards. I thought there were a few of those throughout the course of the game, but they got to figure it out because they're not playing very good defense right now.
Yeah, the next 4 for Seattle, I don't know what the order is, but it's the Jets, the Giants, the Eagles, and the Washington football team.
Yeah.
So they conceivably should be, if they take care of business, 11-3
mm-hmm.
in the next 4 weeks. Good win for them last night on Thursday. Good win for Jeezy. It was a good Thursday night. We got a loaded show today. We have 2 stops on the daily ticker. Wayne Cook, former UCLA quarterback. He is one of our favorites. We interviewed him not too long ago. And he's going to join us as the Bruins and Chip Kelly come to Eugene. Will they be without DTR? We'll get into that in just a second. And then we'll talk with Todd McKim, sidelines for Cal, as they get ready to come to Corvallis and take on Oregon State. We will start in college football with that Oregon game before we talk with Wayne Cook on the ticker. What does he think? Who is going to play? What's it looking like right now? Wayne Cook of UCLA will join us at 12:30. But what do you think about this matchup, Chip Kelly? A 2-touchdown favorite. We'll start there. Dirt and Sprague, happy Football Friday. We start with Oregon next on the Fan. Well, UCLA is coming to Eugene. You'll catch all the coverage here on the home of the Ducks. Dirt, Anthony Newman on the pregame, Dusty and Buck on the postgame. The game itself, 12:30 kick right here on the Fan.
Love that kick time.
It's a good kick time.
Ducks and Beavs, 12:30 tomorrow. You're going to have to
dual screen.
Got to get the flipper going.
No doubt. Multiple UCLA players, according to Ben Bolch of LA Times, including junior quarterback Dorian Thompson-Robinson, or DTR as we've come to know him, are waiting to find out whether they can play against Oregon on Saturday after at least one positive COVID-19 test placed teammates in quarantine through contact tracing. The uncertainty facing the Bruins was confirmed Thursday evening by 2 people close to the team. Who spoke anonymously. A UCLA spokesperson would not comment on player availability right now. And Bruin Report Online is the first one that reported that Thompson Robinson's status is right now in doubt. So we don't know. We'll talk to Wayne Cook. He does play-by-play with UCLA. I don't know if he'll be able to share anything, but we can get his thoughts on that whole story.
Yeah.
But Chip Kelly coming back to Eugene. He held court for a while, and they were able to break away the last time he was here. But Dorian Thompson Robinson, probably the biggest question mark here. If he doesn't play, I can't imagine this game's going to be close. And even if he does play, I'm still not certain how close it'll be. I don't take last weekend's game and assume that's who UCLA is going to be against a team as talented as Oregon. But big news out of UCLA this morning.
This is big news. I think it's also a great update on the story, the fact that this game is likely going to happen. They're on pace. They have enough players. They're traveling up. So all of that looks like it's go. And that's exactly what you wanted to hear. Because I think the first fear after you hear the DTR news is that, oh, God, is this going to be a widespread thing where the game's going to have to get canceled 2 days or a day before, and then you're left in the lurch? Can you play Colorado? It creates a disastrous scenario for the conference, especially for the team that they're trying, I think, to prop up as the year goes on as their undefeated conference champion. You don't want Oregon to lose a game at this point. It's just kind of the unfortunate reality in 2020 that you have to deal with not only injuries that come with football, but also positive tests and contact tracing. Oregon, I believe, is without a handful of players because of contact tracing. They won't say that. I don't know why, but they're without Micah Pittman and some other guys, and the only reasonable conclusion that we can make is they're out because of contact tracing. But this is a break for the Ducks. I mean, this is the second time now in 3 weeks that they're going to potentially get the chance to play a team without their starting quarterback. Their backup is either like Chase Griffin or Chase Artopolius. You never heard of those guys? So
you never heard of Polius?
No, never heard of Artopolius. So we'll see what they can bring to the table if they have to start. DTR is a guy that is such a boomer bust player. And I remember when we talked to Cook before the season started, he is a guy that for two quarters, three quarters can look like one of the best quarterbacks in this conference. And then he'll have a quarter or a half where he'll just drop the ball and fumble and throw picks. And you're just scratching your head like, where the hell is this coming from? You go back to their first game against Colorado. They had like four turnovers in the first quarter, and then they got it going and they ended up scoring 42 points. So they're a very hot and cold hit and miss team. But without him, it's hard to imagine the Bruins coming in and pulling off an upset.
Yeah, last weekend he had three touchdowns, one pick for 196. They did a good job on the ground with Felton. He had over 100 yards and a 4.3 average. Britton Brown also had 5.9. He had 71. They really just ate up Cal on the ground. But again, Cal didn't know they were playing UCLA till last minute. They traveled to LA. Right. They were going through that whole 2 week stretch dealing with their COVID issue with the city of Berkeley. So,
well, they didn't have a defensive line that could practice for 2 weeks, and then the defensive line didn't play ball, shockingly.
So I'm not really putting a lot of stock in a 24 point. It's impressive. You give them credit for it, but I don't think that's truly who Cal was. You know, this is the thing. I think this is a big weekend for Oregon to take that next step. They had their struggles against Stanford early, mm-hmm. and then they broke away, but they had trouble containing Stanford on the ground. And then last weekend, kind of a similar thing. You had a bit of a slow start on both sides of the ball, and then the defense kind of locked in, and then the offense kind of caught up with that last-minute touchdown or that pass to Jalen Redd that ended up leading to the touchdown before the half to make it 19-14. Going in to make you feel so much better about that first half. I'd like to see this weekend, with or without DTR. I know he's a good player, but I'd like to see this weekend should be the week where Oregon says, okay, we're two games in. We've had our share of slow starts. Mm-hmm. Let's go now. We're at home. We've gotten through it. We're 2-0. Yeah. We're right now probably looking like the best team in the Pac-12. This is an opportunity for them to come out. If they look impressive against UCLA, I think people are going to take note of that a little more because of what UCLA did last week. And despite that maybe being an overreaction,
sure,
I think it's a big opportunity for them. If they can come out fast from the start instead of a slow, you're going to feel really good about where Oregon's headed this season.
Yeah, I think as the season goes on, I can excuse early in the year mistakes that we all kind of saw coming. You know, tackling being a main one. There's been a lot of tackling issues all over college football this year because of the limited practice time, and Oregon has been an example of that. They tackled very poorly early on against Stanford. They couldn't tackle anybody to save their lives, it felt like, in that first half against Washington State. But you expect with more reps, more practice, more games that that kind of stuff will get cleaned up. And the other part of it is they're the last in last place in the conference in turnover margin. They're a minus five. They're 11 because you don't have a 12 team because Utah hasn't played yet. But a minus five through two games is awful. They haven't forced a turnover yet, and they've turned it over five times themselves. You cannot beat good teams doing that. They're able to overcome a Stanford team with a backup quarterback. They're able to overcome a Washington State team that's playing with a true freshman that's feisty, but you have more talent than them, and you can wear them down as the game goes on. As your schedule potentially gets tougher, as you're playing teams with more talent, if you're a minus two or a minus three in the turnover margin, you're just not going to be able to win football games. On the flip side of that, the stat that I think I am most encouraged by through 2 weeks, because again, it's a lot of new faces and a new offense, they are the number one team in the country in third down conversion. They're nearly 75% so far. Like, that's a huge clip to be hitting on 75%, nearly 75% of your third down. So I want to see the tackling improve, and I want to see the mistakes cleaned up. Like, as the year goes on, you shouldn't be fumbling against nobody. You shouldn't be forcing balls into four defenders. Like, be smart. You got a decent defense. Trust them to make stops. You don't need to force the issue. And as long as Oregon does that, there's no reason that they can't win this weekend.
Part of that has been too dirt. Like last weekend, you're right. They lost the turnover battle. They had three turnovers in the first half.
It was three straight drives they turned the football over.
I think part of this too is it's a feel out and a comfortable kind of feel into the season of the offense for Tyler Shuck, him being the first year starter for them. I've really loved what you've seen from Verdell on the ground. Red's been great out of the backfield in the receiving department, as you mentioned. No Micah Pittman because he's probably dealing with contact tracing. But I will say, damn impressed with their offensive line. Mm-hmm. Alex Forsyth, by the way, shout out because he is
an
extended member of our family here at Intercom with his mom working here. He was the number one graded offensive lineman last weekend in the Pac-12.
That's kick-ass, man.
So he slid over from where his normal position was coming into college. He's learned the center position really well, done a great job. And offensive line play, not been an issue really for them so far. It's been pretty impressive considering how many guys they lost last year.
Yeah, and they got a lot of guys on the outside that are making plays. Really impressed with their wide receivers so far. A lot of great catches in week one. Same thing here in week two against Washington State. The one thing I want to see from the run game is I want to see them get it established earlier on, because that has been something against Stanford and Washington State. They dominated the line of scrimmage in the second half. And once they started doing that, Shuck's life became much easier and he didn't feel that burden on his shoulders to make things happen. Much like we were just talking about with Russ, like you need a run game just to balance out an offense and help your quarterback, but they haven't been explosive in the run game in the first half of either of those games. So come out, get it established early. That'll help Shuck ease into the game, and the offense should be clicking from the get-go.
All right, let's talk more about this game with Wayne Cook, former UCLA quarterback, now does play-by-play stuff for them. He'll join us coming up next on the Daily Ticker, and then we'll dive into the Beav game a little bit. Cal coming to Corvallis. Todd McKim does Cal sidelines and does a Bear podcast. Those are our two stops for the Daily Ticker. We'll make them next.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
This is the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Well, Wayne Cook played for UCLA. Now he's on their play-by-play team as they come to Eugene to get ready to take on Oregon this week. And there's a little uncertainty here with the Bruins, and we're not really sure what to make of the matchup. We're excited to see it nonetheless, and he joins us now, Wayne Cook. Hey, Wayne, it's good to have you back on with us, man. How you been?
It is a pleasure. I am doing great, but you guys, as far as insiders go, you'll laugh at this. Us broadcasters are going back and forth, basically asking each other, any news? Have you heard anything? Any news? I mean, it's crazy.
Would it be responsible for me to ask you to play doctor here and give your best guess, or should we just move on not knowing who the hell is playing for the Bruins this weekend?
Hey, now hold on, guys. I'm a sideline reporter, so I play doctor on a regular basis. I mean, this game has changed so much. You don't get any access. You don't get any information. So it's a whole lot of guessing.
Well, if let's just play this game. Let's play the hypothetical game, because as you mentioned, we don't have the info yet, and I wouldn't be shocked if it wasn't announced till an hour before kick. Yep. If DTR can't go, what are we looking at the quarterback position, and how does that change things for UCLA?
Well, it changes things a ton. I think it was interesting because last week I interviewing Chip Kelly, and I asked him after the game. I said, well, I kind of commented. I said, Chip, it was great how much Dorian ran. I think it changed the offense. I think it was awesome. But if you watch the game, Dorian also tried to hurdle two guys and went head first a couple times. And Chip just kind of grinned and said, we didn't like it very much because they want him to run, but they want him to get down and be safe.
Yeah.
Because to be honest with you, our backup position is shaky. Okay, so to answer your question, we've got two Chases. We've got Chase Griffin, who's a Gatorade player of the year in Texas a few years ago. He's a real smart guy. From what I'm hearing, he's taken a lot of the number two reps. He's not very big, guys. When you see him stroll out there, he is a small college, Division I quarterback. But he's got a huge brain, and he's got a huge heart. And to, be the player of the year in Texas, you have to be pretty good.
Yeah.
People think he runs a lot, but I think he's more of a passer. And I think he would have to execute the offense that way, be real smart, real accurate, get the ball out on time. So it'll definitely change things if he plays. The other Chase is Chase Artopius, who I know a lot less about. So, we've watched him in warm-ups. We haven't had access to practices this year quite like we have in the past. So it'll be interesting to see, if he gets a chance to play. And then here's the wild card guy, and I've been saying this all along, who looked like he was the backup quarterback, if we would have had a spring practice, was Colson Yankoff, who was a transfer from Washington, who was a four-star recruit. He played for Chris Peterson, and now he's transferred to UCLA, sat out a year. He moved to receiver. He's a big 6'4"-ish, athletic guy, and he's moved to receiver, but he's really not playing there, guys. He's been on special teams. I think if they're desperate, I don't know why, and I don't think it'd be very hard because he was in the offense all year last year to move him back. Like, if they know right now or halfway through the week that Dorian wasn't going to play, and I don't know if that's true or not, I don't know why they wouldn't just say, hey, Colson, come on back, buddy. We're gonna put you back at quarterback. So there's a lot of that I'm going to be watching in the pregame to see who's taking snaps with what center, because that always matters, right? Whoever's putting their hands behind the butt of the starting center is the guy that's probably going to start the game.
That's an interesting move. I didn't know that they had moved him to wide receiver. So we'll keep an eye on that tomorrow. And just on the first two games, and the team might look a lot different as they head up to Eugene to take on the Ducks tomorrow. But game one, they come out, turnover issues early. They try and come back in the game. Offense scores a ton, but they just shot themselves in the foot too much. Right. And then you go to week two, and it's dominance over Kevin. The defense plays great. They hold him down. The offense moves it. Just what have you made of the Bruins? I know they might look different tomorrow, but the way they perform through 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's and I made a comment after that first game that, historically, everybody says this is not news. I'm not real smart by saying this, but you improve your most from week one to week two.
Mm-hmm.
You get to watch yourself on film. You learn a lot. And just to use Dorian Thompson-Robinson as an example, he just was going backwards way too much against Colorado. And he still did that a few times against Cal, but you could tell that the coaches had talked to him. He was moving forward. He was very involved in the run game. He still, is struggling with accuracy issues at times. But when he's that big of a weapon, who cares? Like when you can complete big plays and move around. I thought the offensive line played better. The defense, wow. I mean, our defense was as good as it's been in a long time. And, they showed flashes of that against Colorado, but because of field position and the turnovers that you guys mentioned, they kind of were put in a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think this offense is explosive. I don't think, to be honest with you, comparing Cal, and I thought Cal had a chance to be a good team this year, but now that I've seen Cal and I know it was their first game, and I watch Oregon, athletically they're not the same.
Mm-hmm.
Cal's not the same athletically as UCLA is. UCLA was just a faster team, more athletic team. And so, UCLA's got weapons on offense. They've got guys that can move on defense, but this is a totally different test. They dominated Cal. Obviously, you guys know that they're not going to go up against a team in this conference that's got better athletes than Oregon does.
Yeah. Wayne Cook does sidelines for UCLA football, former quarterback as well for the Bruins. He does not know who's going to be a quarterback, but good job there of breaking down the options the Bruins have. And maybe they go surprise, they go Yankoff there, bringing him in from wideout back to his natural position of quarterback. Wayne, thanks so much for hopping on, man. Enjoy that game tomorrow. Should be a good one, and we'll see if DTR can go. If he can, maybe we get a great football game.
You guys, I cannot wait. And believe it or not, the way things work, we got to keep our fingers crossed still, because I believe they still have to pass tests tomorrow, too.
Oh, my gosh. Well, let's just hope we get the football game. Thanks for coming on, Wayne. We appreciate it, man.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right, now let's go to the Cal side of things. They go to Corvallis. Not a great start for them. They didn't get to play, and then they finally get to play, and then it doesn't go well. Todd McKim does Cal sidelines. He joins us now. Todd, thanks for hopping on with us, man. Not quite the start I think Cal was dialing up for the season, but How would you put into words what happened last weekend, given all the COVID stuff they had to deal with on their team and with the city of Berkeley with what happened last weekend against UCLA?
Well, the team, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it, guys. And it's always good to hear Wayne Cook on the back end. He's been doing this a long time, so he knows what he's talking about. Obviously, the final product was not good. It was ugly, to be honest with you. But considering all the things that went into actually playing the game, maybe not that surprising when you look back on it. When your team can't play 11-on-11 football for 2 weeks going into a game, you got no chance, really. A very, very slim chance of winning. And so it was a good start, block a punt, didn't get a touchdown, got a field goal, get a pick on the next possession. You're thinking, well, all right, this is okay. But after that, it was downhill, and defense wore down. Missing their top two nose tackles, only had, I think, six eligible defensive linemen for that game. One had been switched from offensive lineman to defensive lineman that week. So it just was not a good performance. And as you guys were saying, most improvement comes between weeks 1 and 2. It better be improvement between 1 or 2, or we're in big time trouble.
Yeah, I agree with that sentiment, especially with everything that Cal was going through. It's not a normal lead up to a game. And then what, they find out 48 hours before you got to go to LA and you're taking on the Bruins. I think the biggest surprise, though, just in that outcome, I wasn't surprised at the defense struggle, just because we had heard through the grapevine that potentially it was that defensive line unit that was kind of stuck in quarantine and couldn't get out. I was a little surprised at the offense and the way that they played. And I think that was something Cal fan was excited about, was Garber's when healthy last year. I mean, they were great when he was in the lineup, and a different team without him. Him obviously being back this year. What did you see from the offense, and what do they need to clean up on that side of the ball?
Well, first of all, they didn't run the football very well. And I think that's where it has to start, particularly under Bill Musgrave's offensive philosophy, run the football and then play action pass. Well, if you can't run the football, you're wasting your time with play action pass. You might as well just go into the shotgun and fling it around. And that's kind of what we did in the second half. So they got to run the football better. No question about it. And so, you know, you throw in the fact it's a new offense. They hadn't been able to practice against defensive linemen for 2 weeks. But they've got to run the football better than they did. And the receivers have to win the 50-50 balls. I don't think they won one of those last week. The longest pass play was to a tight end who was wide open. And then the other longest play of the day was 13 yards. I mean, that's not good enough. Right. You win games with explosive plays and creating turnovers. The Bears did get a pick and a punt block, only turned it over once themselves, but there were no explosive plays to speak of, and that has to change as well.
Yeah, Todd McKim is our guest here, covers Cal, the sideline stuff for them. They get ready to come to Corvallis. Now, this has been an interesting back and forth these last two seasons. I remember Cal coming to Corvallis, and people felt really confident, and I think they beat them like 49-7, just absolutely thumped them. And then last year, Oregon State goes to Cal, and there's not a lot of Beaver fans that thought they'd win that. And they went in there and beat them 21-17. So quite a back and forth the last 2 years. What do you think we're going to see this week? And I have no feel on this game whatsoever. I don't think last weekend's game is an indication of the Cal team that's coming to town. But Oregon State also surprised me last year by beating the Bears. What do you think? What are you expecting between these two teams?
I'm going to quote a longtime Oregon State football player and a really longtime Oregon football coach, Rich Brooks. And I think what we're going to see is two hungry dogs after the last scrap of meat.
Because
this is, you know, for Oregon State, I mean, they're 0-2. You go 0-3 and face the Ducks next week in the Civil War. If you're Cal, you're 0-2 going into the big game next week, followed by Oregon and then at Washington State. So the loser of this game is in a world of hurt and is going to really wonder, you know, why do we even play this season? And the winner is at least going to be able to hold their heads up high and say, all right, we got a chance. Maybe the next week we can, you know, get over the 500 mark or get back to 500. So I think it's two really, really desperate teams in Corvallis on Saturday.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Todd McKim does a great job covering Cal, the sidelines, the podcast as well, on Twitter at Todd McKim Sports. Todd, my man, thank you so much for hopping on. We always appreciate the time, and hopefully Saturday we get a good one.
I hope we do too, and enjoy the sunshine while it lasts.
Absolutely. Yeah, no doubt. Todd McKim of Cal, and then Wayne Cook at UCLA. Wayne laid it out. There's about three quarterback options. The first is a really small kid who can't really run.
Yes.
The second is a kid he's doesn't know anything about. And the third would be bringing in their quarterback converted to wide receiver, converting him back to quarterback.
Yes.
and Carson Yankoff. All right. Well, oh, hold on. Oh.
What happened?
Oh, no.
What's going on?
Oh, no. We got a Woj bomb involving the Blazers.
Oh, no. Please tell me it's not bad.
We're bringing back Enes Kanter. Yay.
Well, they got rid of Mario Hezonja.
So we at least got a guy that we can play.
I'm okay with that move. Dude, we got rid of Mario Hezonja.
I know. Right.
That's not it. You still have the mid-level exception to use. There's still more moves to be. This isn't the end of the offseason.
I know. I'm not worried about that.
You're telling me you swap a player who, God, I would never wanted to see on the floor again for a competent backup big?
So here we go. This is the deal. I guess we could talk about this coming up. God, this is going to be a weird show, isn't it?
Free agency opens up in like 2 hours, man.
It does. And we also have a lot of college football and NFL to get to. Taysom Hill is starting, so in my face, I'm an idiot. Yeah. This is the Woj bomb. Portland is acquiring Boston's Enes Kanter in a three-way deal with Memphis. Memphis will get Mario Hezonja, who just opted back in at $1.98 million, and the 30th pick in Desmond Bane from the draft night deal as part of a trade in which the Celtics will get a future Memphis draft consideration.
This is I'll take this trade any day of the week.
Yeah, I'll take Kanter over Hezonja.
Yeah, right.
And Portland knows what Kanter is and what he isn't.
True,
yeah.
Yeah.
But if you need an extra help at the five and you have limited resources.
Right.
I think this also spells that Whiteside is.
And I'm fine with that.
Didn't know he was gone, though.
If you had any question, this pretty much ends that.
He fit well with Dame and CJ. I mean, we're already good. He fit well with Dame and CJ. I think now this does change, though, what you do with your other exceptions. You don't necessarily have the need to go. You know, Paul Millsap had been rumored here. Is that a move you still want to make? Boogie Cousins I don't know how real that was, but some of those kind of guys have been referenced. This can change what you want to address with your remaining assets.
All right, we'll have a little more on this coming up next. We'll dive back into the Pac-12, talk college football. We'll get into the NFL as well. We'll Sprague the line today. I am 0-6 the last 2 weeks. Can I make it 0-9? We might be able to do that. We have a lot more to get to. Dirt and Sprague, we're back with more on The Fan. All right, well, we'll get back into the Pac-12 coming up here. Yeah, it's kind of that day. So the Woj bomb, if you're just tuning in, the Blazers have brought back Enes Kanter in a three-way deal with Boston and Memphis. Mario Hezonja is no longer on the roster, so God is good. He's going to go to Memphis. And the 30th pick is Desmond Bane from the draft night as part of that deal. So the Celtics will get a future Memphis draft consideration.
Yeah.
And then Memphis will take on Hezonja and the 30th pick, and Portland brings back Enes Kanter on the trade exception. They had 7.1.
How much is Kanter making?
$5 million.
$5 million, okay.
So it slides right in, which fits perfectly. They still have the mid-level, which I didn't mean to make that sound too depressing, Dirt said during the break. Sounded like you were going to tell us Dame had something happen. I know what Enes Kanter is.
Sure.
He can bring excitement. He can bring energy, but he's got a lot of moments where he's a little unplayable.
No doubt.
I'm more waiting for the mid-level. So I'm excited in the sense of we know who the backup big is now. It's not going to be Hassan Whiteside. I didn't want it to be Hassan Whiteside. You know what Kanter is. He knows your system. It's a good fit. He already tweeted home sweet home or something like that.
Yeah, he's a good, and he loved playing here. Yep. He worked with the guys, so no chemistry issues,
the
nothing
government
like that.
Member backed him on his turkey. Yep. I don't remember what that deal was. But
yeah, his parents were
something like that.
Exiled by the
Turkish
government. Yeah. So you know, there's a good relationship there.
It ended weirdly. You have to remember that. I think a lot of that is just Kanter being Kanter. He's a bit of a character.
Yeah.
And he had some stuff when he signed saying that they didn't give me time. You know, and it ended up being a lie. Damian Lillard called him on it because he was, if you remember, with Neil Olshey that entire day because that was the day that Dame signed his Supermax extension.
So you know, I think they'll move on. That's not really a big deal. That's kind of what the NBA is, a little drama. But they bring Enes Kanter back. That would basically kiss Hassan Whiteside gone, which I mentally thought he wasn't coming back anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But now we do wait. Now, again, free agency period doesn't start till 3:00 our time. So prime time may have news on this if Portland can make a move. But they have the mid-level. The mid-level is big because it's about $9.3 million. And there's a lot of names that have been thrown out with this thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one person said, this has got to be Millsap, right? I hope they do not use the mid-level on Millsap.
Especially after this trade, no.
Use the biannual on Millsap. He shouldn't be that expensive. He's 36 years old. Use the mid-level at 9. Hopefully you could get a guy. You know, there's a lot of names I like. I think the top guy I like the most is Jay Crowder. If you can convince him to come in on that.
Me too.
I want a defensive dog who is not going to back down. He's a little bit of a bully and he can shoot the three. I want as many wing players as we can possibly get to help with the short stature of Dame and CJ. I think it'd be a good compliment. So good news for Portland. They added a little depth. They have their backup big.
Yeah.
And they still have the mid-level to use.
They needed a backup big, so this was a move that made sense. You look at his run in Portland when he was here for 23 games. He averaged 13-9, basically. You're not expecting that necessarily, but that was a good run. He fit in well with Terry Stotts'
system. Well, and
he
helped that playoff run when Nurkic got hurt.
Oh, he was huge. Yeah, he was their starting center when they went to the conference finals.
So they could have done a lot worse.
Well, and I think you also look at, of all the guys that were available, would you rather have Cantor or Paul Millsap?
Yeah.
You know, like, there's not that big of a difference there for me. They've actually used a trade exception, so good for that. And I also love, and I said this when they made the Covington move, they're being proactive. They're not waiting for scraps and seeing what's left on the table. They're going out and making things happen, and now you have the ability to have all your cards on the table when it comes to free agency, because you've added Robert Covington, who's a guy, when the trade happened, we mentioned the versatility. He can play the four if you need it. So you essentially have Nurkic, Collins, when he's back and healthy, Enes Kanter and Covington as guys who can be four and fives. Maybe Wenyen Gabriel fits into that rotation for a few minutes here or there. But
Nasir Little can play some four.
Right, he can be a big four too, or a smaller four stretching up if you want. Now go
we'll
get better.
Terry trusts him yet.
Sure, it might not be there. But my main thing, and the reason why I like Crowder, the reason I like Covington, go get better defensively. Find a way to improve on that end of the floor. And if you could do that with a Crowder signing, I think I think the Covington trade was a double. I'll give this one a single. I don't think there's a home run this offseason, but you just keep putting guys on base and keep getting hits. Both of these moves I am a big fan of.
Portland's never, unless they dangle the big carrot known as Christian James McCollum, they're not a home run team.
Right.
And that's okay. I mean,
to be a home run team.
It's very hard to be a home run team. I mean, even teams like Milwaukee can't be home run teams with Giannis. So
right.
I think you have to accept that you're largely a singles and a doubles. Maybe sometimes you get a triple. But I got to give him credit so far. And we'll see what he does with the mid-level. I really keep my fingers crossed he makes a good move with that. I think so far he's done a pretty good job this offseason. I know he's maybe not a fan favorite in terms of personality, but that doesn't really matter to me. I can not like him kind of throwing things in the media's face all I want. If he makes good roster moves, that's all I care about because I want to see him win.
All about it. You're better today than you were yesterday.
And they could get even better if they could add a guy that's really complimentary to what this roster is.
We never have to watch Mario Hezonja shoot a basketball again.
Or
dribble.
Oh, raise the roof.
How many times did you watch games last year and just yell when he had the ball? No, no, no.
Get out of the game.
Pass it, pass it.
Put it on the bench.
We never have to do that again.
Oh, yeah. If you ever needed evidence, God was real.
There it is.
Mario Hezonja's been traded. All right, what do you think of that move? We have a lot more to get to in the second hour. Probably a little more on this. We got college football to dive into. The Pac-12 slate's a little weird. Washington State's not going to have their starting quarterback. Are B fans feeling confident about their matchup with Cal? I don't think they should. We'll have a lot more. Hour two straight ahead. Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, There's joy in every journey.